The way parents handle their child's shyness has a big impact on how the child deals with that aspect of his or her personality, as well as how shy the child is later on. The point is that parenting matters, even to the extent of influencing our inborn and genetically shaped temperament. We can help prepare our kids to join with others and experience meaningful relationships by offering encouragement and opportunities that help them develop those mindset skills. We'll talk in a minute about some specific ways to do that. But first, let's explain what we mean by helping kids be receptive to being in relationships.
Cultivating a yes state of mind. Helping kids be receptive to relationships. If we want to prepare kids to participate as healthy individuals in a relationship, we need to create within them an open, receptive state instead of a closed, reactive one. To illustrate, here's an exercise Dan uses with many families. First, he'll tell them he's going to repeat a word several times, and he asks them just to notice what it feels like in their bodies. The first word is no, said firmly and slightly harshly 7 times, with about 2 seconds between each no. Then, after another pause, he says a clear but somewhat gentler yes 7 times. Afterward, clients often say that the no felt stifling and angering, as if they were being shut down or scolded. In contrast, the yes made them feel calm, peaceful, even light. You might close your eyes now and try the exercise for yourself. Notice what goes on in your body as you or a friend says no, and then yes several times. These two different responses, the no feelings and the yes feelings, demonstrate what we mean when we talk about reactivity versus receptivity. When the nervous system is reactive, it's actually in a fight-flight-freeze response state, from which it's almost impossible to connect in an open and caring way with another person. Remember the amygdala and the other parts of your downstairs brain that react immediately without thinking whenever you feel threatened? When our entire focus is on self-defense, no matter what we do, we stay in that reactive no state of mind. We become guarded, unable to join with someone else by listening well, by giving them the benefit of the doubt, by considering their feelings, and so on. Even neutral comments can transform into fighting words, distorting what we hear to fit what we fear. This is how we enter a reactive state and prepare to fight, to flee, or even to freeze. On the other hand, when we're receptive, a different set of circuits in the brain becomes active. The yes part of the exercise, for most people, produces a positive experience. The muscles of their face and vocal cords relax, their blood pressure and heart rate normalize, and they become more open to experiencing whatever another person wants to express. In short, they become more receptive. Whereas reactivity emerges from our downstairs brain and leaves us feeling shut down, upset, and defensive, a receptive state turns on the social engagement system that involves a different set of circuits of the upstairs brain that connects us to others, allowing us to feel safe and seen. When interacting with our kids, it can be extremely helpful to decipher whether they're in a reactive or a receptive state of mind. This, of course, requires mindsight on our part. We need to consider where our kids are emotionally and where we ourselves are at any given moment. If your 4-year-old is screaming, "I want to swing longer," as you carry her under one arm away from the park, that may not be the best time to talk to her about appropriate ways of handling big emotions. Wait until this reactive state passes. Then, when she's more receptive, talk to her about how you'd like to see her respond the next time she's disappointed. Likewise, when your 11-year-old finds out that he didn't get accepted into the art program he'd set his heart on, you may need to hold off on word-heavy pronouncements of hope and alternatives. The downstairs state of reactivity doesn't know what to do with a lot of upstairs words. Often, in moments of reactivity, nonverbals, like hugs and empathetic facial expressions, will be much more powerful. Over time, we want to help our children become more receptive to relationships and help them develop mindsight skills that will let them join with others. Then receptivity can lead to resonance, a way of joining from the inside out that will allow them to enjoy the depth and intimacy that come with meaningful relationships. Otherwise, a child is left adrift, motivated by a sense of isolation rather than a desire and ability to join. One final note before we turn to steps we can take to encourage receptivity and relational skills. As we help children be more receptive to joining with others, we need to keep in mind the importance of maintaining their individual identity as well. For a 10-year-old girl who's doing everything within her power to fit in with a clique of mean girls at school, the problem may not be that she's not receptive enough to joining a we. The concern for her may be just the opposite, that she's lost sight of her me, and is therefore going along with everything this set of bullies tells her to do. Any healthy relationship, whether it's family, friendship, romantic, or otherwise, is made up of healthy individuals in connection with others. To become a part of a well-functioning we, a person needs also to remain an individual me. Just as we don't want our kids to be only right-brained or only left-brained, we also don't want them to be only individualistic, leaving them selfish and isolated, or only relational, leaving them needy, dependent, and vulnerable to unhealthy and harmful relationships. We want them to be whole-brained and enjoy integrated relationships.
What you can do. Helping your child integrate self and other. Whole brain strategy number 11. Increase the family fun factor, making a point to enjoy each other. Do you ever feel like you're spending most of your time either disciplining the kids or carting them from one activity to the next, and not enough time just enjoying being with them? If you do, you're not alone. Most of us feel this from time to time. Sometimes it's easy to forget to just have fun as a family. Yet we are hardwired for play and exploration as well as for joining with one another. In fact, playful parenting is one of the best ways to prepare your children for relationships and encourage them to connect with others. That's because it gives them positive experiences being with the people they spend the most time with, their parents. Of course, children need structure and boundaries and to be held accountable for their behavior. But even as you maintain your authority, don't forget to have fun with your kids. Play games, tell jokes, be silly. Take an interest in what they care about. The more they enjoy the time they spend with you and the rest of the family, the more they'll value relationships and desire more positive and healthy relational experiences in the future. The reason is simple. With every fun, enjoyable experience you give your children while they are with the family, you provide them with positive reinforcement about what it means to be in loving relationship with others. One reason has to do with a chemical in your brain called dopamine. Dopamine is a neurotransmitter, which means that it enables communication between brain cells. Your brain cells receive what some people call dopamine squirts, when something pleasurable happens to you, and it motivates you to want to do it again. Scientists who study addiction point to these dopamine surges as factors that lead people to maintain a certain habit or addiction, even when they know it's bad for them. But we can also help produce dopamine squirts that reinforce positive and healthy desires, like enjoying family relationships. Dopamine is the chemical of reward, and play and fun are rewarding in our lives. What this means is that when your son squeals in delight, when you dramatically dive from his Peter Pan sword thrust, when you and your daughter dance together at a concert or in the living room, or when you and your kids work together on a gardening or construction project, the experience strengthens the bonds between you and teaches your kids that relationships are affirming, rewarding, and fulfilling. So give it a shot, maybe even tonight. After dinner, call out, "Everybody take your plate back to the kitchen. Then find one blanket and meet me in the living room. We're having popsicles in a fort tonight." Another fun family activity that also teaches receptivity is to play improv games together. The basic concept is similar to what improv comedians do when the audience gives them suggestions and the comedians have to take the random ideas and combine them in funny ways that make some sort of sense. If you and your kids are performers, you can actually do this kind of improv together. But there are simpler versions of the activity as well. Let someone begin a story. Then, after one sentence, the next person has to add to it, followed by the next person, and so on. Games and activities like these not only keep the family fun factor high, but also give kids practice at being receptive to the unexpected turns life presents them. You don't want to turn the game into a serious classroom experience, but watch for ways to explicitly connect what you're doing to the concept of receptivity. Spontaneity and creativity are important abilities, and novelty also gets dopamine going. The fun factor principle also applies to the experiences you give your kids as siblings. Recent studies have found that the best predictor for good sibling relationships later in life is how much fun the kids have together when they're young. The rate of conflict can even be high, as long as there's plenty of fun to balance it out. The real danger comes when the siblings just ignore each other. There may be less tension to deal with, but that's also a recipe for a cold and distant relationship as adults. So, if you want to develop close, long-term relationships between your kids, think of it as a math equation where the amount of enjoyment they share together should be greater than the conflict they experience. You're never going to get the conflict side of the equation to zero. Siblings argue, they just do. But if you can increase the other side of the equation, giving them activities that produce positive emotions and memories, you'll create strong bonds between them and set up a relationship that has a good chance of remaining solid for life. Some sibling fun will occur naturally, but you can help it along, too. Break out a new box of sidewalk chalk and have them create a crazy new monster together. Let them use the video camera to make a movie. Have them team up together for a surprise project to give to a grandparent. However you do it, family bike rides, board games, making cookies, teaming up against mom with the water guns, whatever. Find ways to help your kids have fun together and strengthen the bonds that connect them. You can also use fun and even silliness to shift your children's state of mind when they become stuck in an angry or defiant state. Sometimes they won't be in the mood to have you act silly or playful. So be sensitive to the cues you receive, especially with older kids. But if you're sensitive to how your playfulness will be received, this can be an extremely powerful and easily implemented way to help children shift how they are feeling. Your state of mind can influence your child's state of mind, letting you transform fussiness and irritability into fun, laughter, and connection.
Whole brain strategy number 12, connection through conflict. Teach kids to argue with a we in mind. We might wish we could somehow help our kids avoid all conflict, but we can't.